Shortly after the 1803 Louisiana Purchase, President Thomas Jefferson chose Meriwether Lewis to lead an expedition to map the newly acquired territory and find a water route to the Pacific Ocean. Lewis chose William Clark to join him in leading that mission. Their Corps of Discovery traveled for 2 years, covered more than 4,000 miles, and brought home key information about the land, the plants and animals, and the native peoples.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We are joined now by Lanny Jones, an author and magazine editor who has written extensively about Lewis and Clark. Mr. Jones, thank you for being here.
I'm very happy to.
So when we think of Lewis and Clark, we tend to think of them together, right? Almost as one name on that great expedition. But of course, they were unique and different men. And I wanted to spend some time talking about them as individuals, starting with Meriwether Lewis. Where was he from and how did he grow up?
We're talking about Meriwether Lewis. Well, he was from Virginia, and he grew up in a wealthy enough family. And they were friends with the Jeffersons, and Lewis actually went to work as Jefferson's private secretary for a while. And so he was an affluent, educated, interesting individual. He was almost too interesting because he had some trouble getting along with people, and he was somewhat opinionated. I mean, he did not read the room well.
Did he have a formal education? And on top of that, what kind of experiences did he have that would later lend themselves to this Corps of Discovery mission?
He was quite well educated. For some reason, I'm blanking out on the college, but I believe it was UVA, and much more so than William Clark, who grew up in a large, more frontier-like family. And Clark, we'll talk about him later, but he was the ninth of 10 children.
On Meriwether Lewis, how did he first catch the attention of Thomas Jefferson?
Because they were from Charlottesville, and they just got to know each other there. And then Jefferson, when he became president, initially hired Lewis to be his secretary and got to know him much better.
You touched on his personality a little bit, Meriwether Lewis's personality. Tell us more about what he was like.
Well, I mean, one of the things about Lewis is that he was a fanatic. He these days we would say he was on the spectrum someplace. He had great powers of concentration. He measured everything. He was a would-be scientist. So when he goes on the expedition, he writes down the name of everything. He brings out a tape measure and measures literally the height of an anthill. If he catches a fish, he counts how many scales the fish has, and how he measures how wide the mouth of the fish is. So he tried to quantify things, and that was the way he thought, and that made him comfortable if he could do that. He was uncomfortable in a social setting and reading the room, and so he wasn't good at that, and that cost him later, because when he became governor of Missouri, of the Louisiana Territory, I should say, he couldn't really work well with people, and he made enemies, and people challenged him to duels, and so he got into trouble that way, and that led to his problems.
Let's dig in a little bit to the early life of William Clark then. The early part of his life, what do we know about that period and what shaped him?
Well, Clark, was an adventurous man and an outgoing man. By the way, both Lewis and Clark were bigger than most people. They were both around 6'2", which was a half foot larger than most American men were then. For example, no one realizes like Daniel Boone was 5'8", much smaller. But Clark was in a large frontier family, and his parents had 10 children, and he was the ninth of 10. So he grew up in a big family. He had no choice. He learned how to get along with people. And so he did that very well. And his older brothers, two of them became generals in the Continental Army. That was the famous George Rogers Clark, his eldest brother, who was a military hero of the frontier. And so he was heavily influenced by them. And Clark moved, the whole family moved from Virginia to Louisville, Kentucky. And so they were really living on the frontier. And I can add just one comment about both of them, kind of comparing them. Now, we tend to think of legend as pairs of men as being opposites. So we have Abbott and Costello, we have Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, and we have all of these opposites. But Lewis and Clark were both very intelligent, and they're not so much opposites as they were different. They were just different personalities, so you had to read them differently. And the men of the expedition, the 33 men they commanded, really respected them both, but in a different way. I mean, typically during the expedition, Lewis would be walking alone by himself on the riverbank, and Clark would be with the men in the boats, kind of commanding the actual voyage itself.
Explain for us how they actually came together. First of all, did they know each other before Lewis asked Clark to join him, and were they considered friends?
They knew each other briefly in the Army, and they were both posted to the same place in Ohio, and in Pittsburgh, I think. And they were both sort of mutually impressed with one another. And Clark outranked Lewis at that time. And so they knew each other. And so when Lewis asked Clark if he would join the expedition in their voyage, Clark immediately agreed because he knew Lewis and so respected him.
You mentioned that they were both physically large men, at least larger than others, most others for the time. Both had military backgrounds. How did the military prepare them for what was to come with this two-year mission?
Well, they were commanders and they were soldiers, and they got the job done, and that's what they tried to do. So it's almost a familiar American type. They took the orders from Jefferson, and Jefferson gave them long, complicated orders. You know, find the best way to the Pacific, get to know the tribes, you know, figure out what's out there, and they worked very, very hard to do that. And the important thing is they wrote it all down. This is, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but they took the time to write their journals. And their journals are the greatest journals in the history of all exploration. There's, you know, the official published version now, you know, is about 15 volumes, big thick volumes, and it's a beautiful edition put out by Gary Moulton at the University of Iowa. And I did a tiny, smaller edition. You can put it in your back pocket. That was my point. But still, it is, and it's literature. It has, a great narrative. We're going to find the Pacific. It has interesting characters. And so we have the two captains, but we have Chicago Weir, the Indian woman. We have the baby. We have the various enlisted men with their very interesting issues. And so it's full of characterizations, and it's full of the human voice. And so, I mean, people, Hemingway famously said that American literature began with Huckleberry Finn because of its use of the vernacular. But you see the vernacular in the Lewis and Clark journals, you know, way before that. And they're talking They say I woke up as hungry as a wolf. You know, when they're mosquitoes, they smell like mosquitoes all around. And the Indians wear moccasins, so they spelled it moccasins. And so this is sort of misspellings and I wouldn't call it illiteracy, but there's comical misspellings. It's literature and the way that it commands your attention. You read the journals, it sort of grabs you by the throat.
By the way, did Lewis and Clark have their own families?
Did they ever what?
Did they have their own families back home?
Oh, yes, excuse me. Lewis, never married. And Clark had a family and children and was a good father to his children. And he sent at least once on the West Point. And he wrote letters to them. But Lewis, today we also call him a loner. He was a loner.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Tell us more about their actual roles during the expedition. You touched on this a little bit, Lanny Jones, but looking back on that history, how did they divide things up?
Well, one thing I did to understand their roles was to understand what the enlisted men, was important to them. And when you look up, you could do a word cloud, you know, where a computer analyzes every word in their journals and tells you how often they appear. And the most frequent word is river, which is not all that surprising. That's where they were. That's what they were doing. They were on rivers the whole time. And they, but the next most frequent words become great. Like it's great, like Great Falls and the Great Portage and everything is great. And so that tells you a little about their ambitions. But then when you look at what the words the men used, a couple of enlisted men did their journals, and they talked only about Clark, and they say Captain Clark did this and Captain Clark did that. And they don't even talk about Lewis because Lewis was a scientist, and he was off writing down things and creating very real science, but that's what he did.
They were certainly prolific writers in those journals, Lanny Jones. Tell us more about Lewis and Clark as communicators in other ways while they were on their journey. I'm speaking particularly about any negotiations they had to have with the native people.
Oh, the natives, you say the negotiations they had with native peoples?
Yeah, what were they like in communicating with them, in talking to them? One of them take the lead on all of this?
Yeah, they were impressed. William Clark's father, George Rogers Clark, had been a fighter against Indians, and so you imagine they might be suspicious of them, as it turned out, the Indians helped them. So the Lewis and Clark depended on the kindness of strangers, as they say, and the strangers in this case were the Indians, who taught them how to get a canoe around the rocks by putting up a sail on the canoe and carrying it. And they taught them what roots they could eat and what roots they should not eat. And so they told them about the science of survival. And so by the time Lewis and Clark got to the Pacific Ocean, and they were at what was called Fort Mandan, which is named after the tribe there, they had nothing but great respect for the Indians. And then on the way back, the expedition kind of stumbled, almost froze to death, stumbling out of the Bitterroot Mountains, and the Nez Perce tribe saved them and fed them and took care of them. And so the respect that was engendered by the kindness of the tribes of the indigenous peoples made a huge impact on Lewis and Clark. And you see it in their journals and in their conversations later. And one of the sad things, and I'm going to get way ahead, but Clark later participated in the removal of the Indians because he thought he was doing them a favor to get them away from the whiskey traders and let them live by out in the mountains by themselves. And that did not really do them that great a favor.
Lewis and Clark, of course, became quite famous as a result of the expedition. What was it like for them personally? What did that fame mean to them personally?
It's a little hard to read with Lewis because he was a powerful person, and he was the governor of the territory. And then Clark became the governor of Missouri, and he became the most famous person in the West. And what did it mean to him? I think he took it seriously. And people came to call on him. For example, the famous writer Washington Irving, a classic Eastern writer, came to St. Louis and met with Clark because he wanted to meet him, the famous William Clark. And so Washington Irving interviewed Clark and wrote about it. And Clark later, when he died in 1938, the funeral procession for Clark's funeral was a mile long in St. Louis. And this is a mile of carriages and people walking. So it was a very long procession.
Did Lewis and Clark benefit financially from the expedition?
Yeah, I would say somewhat. I don't know if you can measure it in dollars exactly. They're more or less on expense accounts. But they were both government employees. They're both high-ranking government officials, both in charge of the territory, the largest in terms of square acres, more territory they were in charge of than anybody was in charge of except the president, because they were in charge of the frontier. And every inch, basically, the Louisiana Territory, sort of west of the Mississippi River, they more or less all were responsible for.
Tell us more about the death of Meriwether Lewis, which we've read was obviously a sad event, but under suspicious circumstances, at least in the beginning. What can you tell us?
Lewis went out and was going back to Washington. Lewis, he had his suspense account challenged. And so he was going to Washington to argue about his suspense account. And he, on the way, he dies in Tennessee mysteriously in a cabin. He had rented a cabin, and he's shot there. And it, it's generally thought, and I certainly think, that it was a suicide. He just couldn't face the idea of going all the way to Washington and perhaps losing this. And Clark, who knew Lewis well, of course, also thought it was a suicide. And so the, it's like JFK. There, to me, it was a single bullet and one shooter, and the shooter was Lewis. Clark died more conventionally. He survived cholera in St. Louis, and then he died, basically of pneumonia in St. Louis. And somewhat of old age. He lived, as I said, he had nine brothers and sisters, and he outlived them all. And he sort of dies of old age in his house in St. Louis. And so he had a satisfying life. I think he was about 68 when he died.
From your,
that isn't that old these days, but that's what it was then.
I was going to ask Mr. Jones, from your own work, your own research, observation of Lewis and Clark, what else would you want our listeners and TV viewers to know about the two of them? Maybe something we didn't learn when we were all in school. What have we not covered that you would want to point out?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's the relationship between the two of them and how they made it work. And then the fact that they did that, and then they wrote a great piece of literature, and they wrote it as writing. I mean, the journals were not like a daily diary you just turned in every day. They wrote things down, but then they rewrote it. They left things blank, and they filled them in later. I mean, Lewis especially did this when he sees the Great Falls of the Missouri. he goes back and fills it in with a better description. And he's a typical writer. He goes home and says, you know, I could write this better. And he tries to write it up better. And so I just like the way that they created a book of literature, I mean, a work of literature together. And the men did the same. And the respect that they each engendered in different ways. And the other important thing to know is that the prevailing myth was that the West was empty. You know, there was nothing there. But what they discovered and wrote down and put on the maps was that the tribes were there, and they were all over the place. And so they wrote, when Clark published his map, which became the governing map for the rest of Western exploration in America, it showed where the mountains were, yes, and the rivers were, yes, but it also showed where the tribes were. And people tried to conveniently ignore that later, but he made it very clear that it was a populated West. And that's the thing to know, is that it was not an empty West. It was a populated West.
Leads me to my final question. What would you say is the legacy of Lewis and Clark and their place in our history?
The legacy is that they gave us the wilderness and made it America. And the idea that we were a westerning nation, that our dreams were westward, really came from Lewis and Clark. It wasn't the dream of expansion did not end at the Mississippi River. They made it a westerning nation, and that really governed American history for the next century.
Thank you, Lanny Jones, author and magazine editor for the biographies of Lewis and Clark. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was enjoyable talking to you, Paul.
Thanks for listening to the Books That Shaped America podcast. For more information about the series, you can visit our website, cspan.org/books-that-shaped-america. And remember to follow this podcast so you never miss an episode.